Thanks, Dave. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Dr. John Duffy is here. He comes by every other Wednesday and we talk about affairs of the mind. John, I don't know if you had a chance to hear our last segment, but we were talking about a woman who writes for Huffington Post, and she just put in this article, it came out this morning, about her six-year-old son that wants to dress like a princess for Halloween. She has kind of an inner struggle. She's wondering what sort of a message it sends if she lets him dress like a princess,
right.
What sort of a message it sends if she doesn't let him dress like a princess. What are your thoughts on this?
Times have changed so fast that this is actually a question that was posed to me when I was a relatively new therapist about 15, maybe 20 years ago. And it felt like a pretty hard no, like, oh, he's going to get bullied. You don't want to put him in that position. Absolutely. Let's find some other costume for him. And literally, it was a Halloween costume. Now, kids are so comfortable with the idea of gender fluidity and, you know, and the LGBTQ community that the taboo around that, even among young kids, is dissipating really, really quickly. So my answer would be completely different now. I totally understand where your texter John was coming from because.
Yeah, and I feel he's taken some heat.
I can imagine.
He was being honest.
Yeah. Yeah, he was being honest, and I think for a lot – listen, I work with a lot of parents whose kids come out in one way or another,
Yeah. And
it's a very difficult process, right? Because there's you envision certain things for your kids still, I think, in our generation, right? And there is a little bit of grieving, mourning, and confusion about like, okay, so what – especially if it's not like I'm gay or, you know, if it's like I'm transgender or I'm queer. There's a lot of the phrasing that – a lot of us are completely unfamiliar with. I've had
sure.
to learn a lot of this stuff from kids, but I've got the luxury of doing that.
Right.
Whereas a lot of parents get blindsided and they're not sure, like, okay, so what does this mean? And how do I treat you differently now? Like, a lot of us need a playbook, and there isn't a very clear one out there.
I just feel bad for him because he's really taking grief. And, you know, dressing up as a girl if you're a boy is not going to make you gay.
Right.
And I know that he didn't think that that's true, but he doesn't know. And you're right. People deal with it differently. I don't think for a minute John would have a problem dealing with it later on if it showed up that one of his kids was transgender or something. It's just confusing to people. The unknown is scary, isn't it?
The unknown is scary. And I think John is just expressing something that I think a lot of people feel is that, you know, like, I'm not sure what that means. And I'm not sure that there isn't some suggestibility to our kids. I hear that from parents a lot. Like, mm-hmm. you know, wow, there's so much fluidity out there. Mm-hmm. Is my kid going to, is this a phase? Or, you know, what is this something just my kid's going through temporarily?
Right.
Or is this something he or she really is?
Would your opinion on this change at all, either drastically or non-drastically, based on the region of where this took place? We live in Chicago, which is a fairly progressive area. But there are some places that are some are more progressive, some are less. Would that alter your answer on this
for
at all?
For sure.
It would.
I mean, just being really straightforward and honest, yeah. I think in more rural areas, this might be a little less understood and accepted. And so my answer would be wildly different than it is,
yeah.
you know, right here in the city or in the suburbs.
Something else to bring up, and several texters have mentioned this. I've been thinking this all along. Is this story a different story if it's a girl that wants to dress as a boy character for Halloween? And sadly, it is to some extent, isn't
for
it?
For sure, right? I mean,
you
think
know
about
how many
it.
Boy characters I dressed as? Even as a kid,
sure.
I was such a tomboy in what
yeah.
I wore.
Yeah.
That didn't change who I was. That was who I was.
Right. No, I think even when we were kids, you know, girls dressed as, you know, baseball players or
right.
in suits like men, you know, like that was pretty normal and kind of cute and kind of funny, whereas we looked at the boys sideways if they were dressed like a girl. There's no
yeah.
doubt about it that's changed. That was true 15 or 20 years ago, too. This has all changed pretty quickly, again, with a nod to John.
I want to throw one more spin into this, and
yeah.
I'm sure it's one that you've experienced at some point. Let's put the same scenario out. It's a six-year-old boy that wants to dress like a princess. Sometimes you're going to get a situation where one parent says, yeah, let him dress like a princess, and the other parent says, oh, no, that's not going to happen.
Right.
What do you do when it tears the parents apart that way?
Yeah. So I always encourage parents in situations like that are pretty sensitive for the kid or could be to make those decisions outside of that realm where that child is present,
yeah,
and come to some consensus. But the last thing you want to do is shame a kid for that choice, right? You know, he's making that choice for a reason. So I usually encourage parents in situations like that to be curious, like to ask your kid, so what draws you to this? This is an interesting choice. So talk to us about it, you know, without it being an interrogation. And to the extent that you can put your fear and your own judgment aside, you know, just like, be curious, because there's a reason, right? There's a reason that a six-year-old boy is interested in dressing like a girl. And, you know, it'd be interesting for parents to know that.
You say no shame, no judgment, and we know what our parents did. And I'm sorry, I think that's why I listened to my mom, because of shame and judgment that she put on me. And a lot of other people listening, when did that change? Because it seemed to work. Like, I was kind of afraid of my mom.
I was afraid of my dad. I think that I think it's a struggle to be a parent today, because the old techniques don't work anymore. And I think with the onset of social media and just the availability of all the information known to man, like, I work with a lot of situations where and this is usually playful in families, not always, where a child will say, well, I happen to know the number for DCFS. So if you cross me, you know, I will dial that number. And usually it's playful, but kids aren't kidding. That they're not just aware that that's a thing that exists, but there's a phone number and I can find that, because I can find anything.
Right. But they don't realize what the repercussions of that phone call would be.
And oftentimes that does happen.
Yeah.
You know, so kids don't call unless it's a serious thing, right? Because that has happened even in my practice where it was a mistake, for sure.
Hey, can you remember a time where things have shifted this dramatically in such a short span of time? It just seems like in the last 10 years or so. And again, I know social, I understand that computers and social media play into that, but it just seemed like everything was kind of status quo for a long, long time, and then it was the exact opposite.
I think gender roles are switching faster than almost anything ever has.
Yeah.
You know, like, we've had this onset of different types of, like, nicotine and marijuana delivery devices and things like that. This has shown up in the last few years. But really, the shift in gender roles, that's a major, major shift. And in our kids' generation, that happened really fast. And it's continuing. There's enormous acceptance across the board.
I remember asking you this a couple months ago, and your answer is still playing in my head, about how all those the books about raising children, we had dozens and dozens of them for years and years.
Right.
You can almost just throw them out the window at this point because of all the changes that have happened recently, right?
Yeah, because it used to be that parents could kind of, they could distribute wisdom to their kids because we knew more than our kids about their world, right?
Yeah.
So we could teach them about their world. We could lecture them about their world. Now, we know way less about the world our kids are experiencing than they do.
And so, it's okay to say that as a parent, right?
Yeah.
It's all right to be honest and say flat out, you know more about this than I do. I'm here to guide you, but you know more than I do.
It's imperative. We don't know how Snapchat works. We have to ask.
Right.
Right? We have to learn from them
a
lot more, and we have to listen a lot more than we speak.
So that doesn't equal disadvantage, or does it? Like, in the old days, under the old rules, it was just assumed your mom and dad know more than you. They've lived it. You haven't. But now, is it okay for a parent to say to their kids exactly that? I don't know as much about this as you do.
I don't think it's a disadvantage. I think it's a connection. I think it's kind of like, you know, that admitting, like, hey, you know, we're going to have to kind of navigate this together, but you're going to have to teach me the basics because I don't really know those.
Right.
You know, like, that's a really great connection for kids. And kids like that idea that, you know, like, my mom or my dad doesn't know this, I'm going to sit them down and walk them through it, you know?
Yeah.
But a lot of parents don't want to admit they don't know because they're the parent and they don't want to say, oh, I'm sorry, I messed that up.
Right.
Or I don't know about this, because that's just not how we were brought up. Our parents always knew, allegedly.
Right. And we also don't want to share our stories, right? We think we're giving tacit permission if we say, I drank when I was in high school. We think, like, oh, no way I'm going to share that with my kids. And I always encourage parents, like, to share your stories, in large part because kids today are really savvy. They know in all likelihood you probably did the things that they're doing.
You know me. I'm pretty much an open book. I say it on the air. I am honest with my kids.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but I am who I am. So Popeye.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I'll go on.
Mental health days, very important. We get sick days through a lot of corporations. We get sick days here at work. Should we be getting mental health days? We're going to take a break and talk about that with Dr. John Duffy next. It's 720 WGN.
It's Phil Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Dr. John Duffy is here. He's got a new book, you know, Parenting the New Age. I'm sorry, no. Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. It's a lot to say, John.
I did that on purpose to you.
Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. It could be a good Christmas gift.
It absolutely
it could
be.
A great
I
one.
I encourage
yeah.
it. As a,
could
a
be a great Hanukkah
stuffer.
Gift.
Absolutely.
Yes. Something for Ramadan?
I'm hoping so.
Everything. Let's talk about mental health days. Again,
yeah.
Wendy described them very, very accurately. This is a fairly new concept. What exactly is going on?
Right. So a few states, Florida, Colorado, Utah, Washington, are considering in legislature allowing a certain number of mental health days per semester or school year for kids from grammar school all the way through high school.
Yeah. And let's stress a very important aspect. No questions asked.
No questions asked.
Right?
Right, right.
Really?
Just a note from mom and dad saying, this is the mental health day. Exactly. Yeah. Hmm. Yep.
It's a good idea.
I agree. I love the idea. I think it takes a lot of the stigma away from I'm having a hard time, I'm depressed today, I'm anxious today, I'm overwhelmed today. And I work with more and more kids who have difficulty getting to school a lot of the time, to take the stigma away from that and to know, okay, for a day or two this semester, this is going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Parents have been doing this actually on the sly for a very long time. You know what I mean? And just saying, oh, okay, I'm going to call in and I'll call in sick. But
right.
this takes another step because it does take any stigma even within the household away from it. Like, we're allowed this. We can. It's no big deal at all. And it normalizes the idea that kids suffer depression, anxiety, and they get stressed and overwhelmed.
Because I know at our kids' high school, you get 7 excused absences. Like if a parent calls you in and says, you know, they're not coming in today,
right.
you get 7 of those, no questions asked. Anything beyond that, you'd need a doctor's note or something. So
7 throughout the year, Wendy, or
no,
simultaneous?
Semester.
Oh, per semester?
It's per semester.
Oh.
And I just, when I think back to when I was in high school, my mom didn't let me stay home very frequently. But
right.
if I said I got a test, I'm not ready for it, my mom would call me in. I think we should be able to do that.
Well, I like the within a household, I like the camaraderie, like the working together of a parent and a child. Like, you know, I get this is a really stressful day. You know what? We're going to give you a pass today. You know what I mean? Like, and once or twice, 3 times a semester, I don't mind that at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Can't take advantage of it, though.
Right, right. Well, that's the fear on the other side, and this is happening in arguments in these legislatures, is like, you know, we're coddling our kids and we're giving them the opportunity to take advantage. And so that, I suppose that's probably going to happen. But the upside of removing some of the stigma and allowing for these days, I think it's going to work well for kids.
You listed the states. It's a very small list. Why is it such a small list? And do you think other states, if this goes through in the beginning states, will more of them glom onto this?
Well, if you picture kind of Colorado, Washington, Utah, they're oftentimes in the front of a couple of different movements.
Yeah, I guess so.
And,
yeah.
And so I think sometimes there are test states that try certain things out to see how they play and how they work. And, you know, I know that in Florida, they've been running into a problem with kids just not coming to school. And so this is one way.
Because they live in Florida. Who'd want to go to school if you lived in Florida? There's a lot to do.
Right. Right. So, so this is a way to mitigate some of that, too. It's kind of like, you know, there's an administrative element to this, too, where it's like, okay, there's less paperwork involved, and we can just allow this to happen a couple times a semester without making a big deal out of it.
Are they even looking at this in Illinois or not yet?
As far as I know, not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about employers looking into it? Because, you know, we working people every once in a while need a mental health day, don't we?
This is actually a cue that these states have taken from large employers that allow a couple of mental health days every year. And you are able broadly in some big consulting firms and some law firms to declare this is a mental health day, literally a mental health day. And so I'm going to take this day off.
I know you have personal days, but I'd like to see it change from being called a personal day. I offer way too much information about everything. So right. I would say a mental health day. I need it. And I like the fact that the stigma is being erased if we all are talking about it openly and honestly.
When I heard in Colorado specifically, they're encouraging the families to say it's a mental health day and not just a personal day or a day where we have a doctor's appointment, to be overt about that in an effort to eliminate stigma to some extent.
Can I ask you something completely unrelated to what we were just discussing?
Absolutely.
There's a story that took another turn yesterday. This kid that was bullied, there was a kid that was bullied. He was beat up by a couple of kids. He ended up dying from the injuries. I'm sure you're aware of the story. I can't figure out anything good that could possibly come of this story. The school was aware that this kid had a history of being bullied. Two of the kids kind of sucker punched him. He hit his head on a pole. He ended up dying, like I said. Is there something, John, that we can learn from the story? Because it's just horrible.
Yeah, you know, one interesting thing that is now falling out of stories like this is kids are talking about it. So I didn't know about that story until the other day when, I don't know, 3-4 kids maybe told me about the story.
Yeah.
And they talk about it amongst themselves. You know, there's dissonance among kids when bullying is concerned. You know, whereas maybe a generation ago, this was something we kind of just accepted as part of high school or middle school life. Kids no longer accept this. So there's this question of like, you know, boy, I thought we were better than this. I'm surprised we're allowing this to happen. Mm-hmm. What do you think happened in this particular instance that mm-hmm. things went so sideways here? You know, so I think the upside, if there is one to something like this, is our kids are talking about it and they're working it through. And I think that, honestly, they're trying to kind of put bullying out of business kind of finally and forever.
Can that happen?
I think that this generation is onto it, you know what I mean, and kindness is a big thing for them, and so there's a lot of anti-bullying campaigns that aren't just run by schools but are actually run by students seriously, and which is different than it used to be. So, do I think that can happen 100% altogether everywhere? Probably not. Do I think we can make a massive dent? I think kids are already doing that.
Good.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me how much kids know about what's going on in the world news-wise. I mean, think about it. When we were growing up, the news was on basically at 10 o'clock at night. Sometimes you'd watch it with your parents. A lot of times, as a young kid, you'd stay away from that. But now I get stressed out when I hear my phone just vibrate when I wake up, and it wakes me up now.
Right?
I know that's terrible. I should move my phone. But I look to see what's happening with the world, and if it's stressing me out, I've learned how to deal with my stress a little bit. Kids can't figure that out yet. They're being inundated with what's going on.
This is part of the difficulty of being a kid today, and this is what's new. This is part of their lives that we are not privy to. They know what's going on everywhere. You know what I mean? Just that the notifications that we have popping up, they have popping up, and sometimes more, because they troll a bunch of different websites. They'll look at Reddit. They'll look at, you know, the Huffington Post, but they'll look at a bunch of other sites too and gather a whole bunch of information. So they're inundated with a whole lot of notifications before their feet hit the floor in the morning, and they know what's going on in the world. And usually it's not good news.
Yeah, it seems like it. And I know social media adds to their stressors, is a stressor for them as well, like the wanting to be liked and not liked in their posts. But I'm just thinking about these news alerts. I'm shocked at how much young kids know today about what's going on in the big world of
ours. It's amazing what they know. It really is.
So what should we do? Throw our phones away?
Throw our phones away, John? Is that what you want us to do?
Let's throw our phones away. Absolutely. No, I think what we need to do is to talk to our kids more about what's going on and respect that they understand what's going on.
You and have an opinion.
Yeah, and you can start those conversations earlier in their lives than you think.
Right.
Way earlier.
Yeah.
The book is called Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. I highly recommend it. I love it. I'm flipping through it. I'm reading different chapters. I'm doing it out of order. Is that okay?
I encourage reading it out of order.
But that makes sense, right? You go to the parts that seem most needable to you.
And it's laid out, you know, kind of issue by issue. And some issues are going to jump out to some parents and some are going to jump out to others as, you know, as priorities, for sure.
The book is available now wherever your favorite books are sold. You're doing like a big book tour. You have anywhere coming up?
I know I'm talking up at New Trier. I think that's coming up in January. There are one or two others, but they are eluding me right now.
Are they up on drjohnduffy.com or follow you on Facebook?
Yep.
And plug the podcast really quickly, John, too.
Yeah. So I've got two podcasts. So one is with my wife Julie. It's called Better. You can find that on iTunes. One with Heidi Stevens
called Not As Good.
Oh, that, I don't know why. Heidi, why if you're listening,
why did you name it
Address
Better
the
and
correspondence
Not As Good?
To Bill.
That
not
doesn't
me.
Make sense.
It was the
good.
Only title that was left. It's called On Purpose. It's with Heidi Stevens from the Tribune.
It's very good. It's very, very good. John, always fun when you come up. We always learn a lot. That's the important thing. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for
and we'll talk
you.
To you in 2 weeks. That's Dr. John Duffy, Wendy. That's who that is.
It is Dr. John Duffy. And coming up after the news, a guy that I used to work with at Triton College Radio.
Oh.
We both had a radio show. He is a published author. He's going to be involved in a Lit Fest. He's also an author. His name's Bill McCormick, and we'll talk to him after the news.